This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
G'day, you are listening to RTRFM 92.1. This is the Indie Media Show, and you're here with me, Joni Boyd. And before we get into it, I'd like to acknowledge that we are broadcasting from the unceded lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people. I offer my respects to them and their elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledge that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Huge thanks to Matt for the news and Jeff Bowen for another great On The Record. You can catch On The Record Monday to Thursday at 9 a.m. every time. God, I say that every time. You can catch it Monday to Thursday at 11 a.m. if you like, or you can listen back on the website rtrfm.com.au. But yeah, right now you're listening to Indie Media, your activist journalist program, your grassroots movement news, letting you know what's going on with, you know, resistance all around the country. And we've got quite an important show for you, I reckon. We're chatting to Noongar activist Mia Hyde about these 20 kids who are being moved from juvenile detention to the maximum security Casuarina prison. Mia, among others, are putting together a protest and a petition to protest the move. Returning to the movement against the Scarborough Gas Hub and the related industries around there. We've got Raylene Cooper from the Murujuga Aboriginal Corporation and Save Our Songlines protesting Woodside's Burrup Hub, which is degrading the sacred Murujuga rock art. So a very important show. Keep it locked to RTRFM 92.1. Twenty young boys are being moved from Banksia Hill Juvenile Detention to the maximum security Casuarina Prison due to supposed property damage and unruly behaviour. This is following WA's prison inspector uncovering cruel, inhumane and degrading conditions and rising incidents of self-harm and suicide attempts at Banksia Hill. Things are getting worse for the kids in our justice system, and the announcement of this move has been met with massive outrage in the community. There's a petition going around, campaigns to hold our parliamentarians to account, and a protest is being organised for this Thursday in Forest Chase at 11 a.m. Here to chat more about the campaign is Mia Hyde. Hi Mia, how's it going?
Hi, good morning. Well, how are you?
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm keeping nice and warm here in the studio. Lucky me. So, Mia, what's happening with these kids? Give us a rundown.
So basically, it's a whole ordeal, but these children are 20 children who we can only assume the majority of which are First Nations.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, the majority of our incarcerated population are First Nations, have exhibited some quite intense behaviours, which are very clearly a cry for help on their behalf, such as forming suicide packs and having attempts, self-harming, also like destructing their rooms and trashing things and not eating and trashing their food and attacking guards. These guards also have met this behaviour so far with things like three-point restraints, which kind of cause these children to not even be able to stand up straight, and it resulted in further injury due to this. And because they can't restrain them or anything and things keep getting worse, they are deciding to move them to a maximum security prison, which is Casuarina. And even though they will be separate from the regular inmates at Casuarina, they will be in a maximum security prison, which will very much only further the problem. And this decision is still being finalised, so we do have time to try and turn it around, hence the campaign.
Mm. So the move is basically being justified that, you know, these kids are acting out, and so they're going to put them in a worse situation, and they're not treating them very well, and so they're just going to treat them worse, and that will surely make things better.
Yeah, that's kind of their rule of thought. And they, if you read any articles about it, the media is very much in blame of the children, which is just so catastrophically wrong. And they are hiding it under the kind of guise that they are doing it so that they can refurbish their rooms and build everything back up. But that is just simply not the case.
Yeah, and this comes after the WA Prisons Inspector did a snap inspection of the Banksia Hill Juvenile Detention Centre and found, you know, cruel and inhumane conditions. So things are already not that great for these kids where they are now. And, you know, they're going to be moved to Casuarina where, you know, clearly things are going to be worse. What are some of the risks, you reckon, to putting these kids in a maximum security prison?
Oh, there's so many risks. I think the highest of which is further mental health deterioration and risks of self-harm and suicide, which are already not even risks. They're things that are happening daily in these places. And other things like being in a situation as children where there are, you know, incarcerated adults around is extremely distressing. And they already only get about an hour, sometimes 2 hours of outside of their cell time a day at Banksia, and that will lessen even further at Casuarina. And it's very much that kind of caged madness where it's just driving them further into a worse mental health situation. And it's just very clearly the absolute wrong decision.
Absolutely. And so, putting this into the perspective, the context of a systematically racist justice system, like how does this, you know, we don't know who these boys are, but we can assume that a lot of them are First Nations, and so what are some of the risks and worries associated with that?
Well, the media is definitely trying to convince us otherwise, but it's very obvious that most of these children are First Nations, because First Nations people make up about 28% of the entire incarcerated population, even though they only make up about 5% of the Australian population. Mm. So it kind of speaks for itself. And we also know from support worker and youth worker accounts and visitor accounts and investigation accounts that the majority of the children at Banksia are First Nations. And like, our children are being targeted daily and are at scrutiny of systematic racism. There's so much evidence pointing towards it, and the fact that these decisions would absolutely not be made if these children were white and privileged. Like, and we can see that through the research that they aren't. And for all of this decision to be happening during NAIDOC week is just kind of a further stab towards this kind of First Nations prejudice and injustice that's ongoing, that they definitely try to hide with fancy media and kind of alleyway politics and stuff. But it's very... if you dig deep enough, you can find the evidence that it's still ongoing.
Absolutely. And when you look into, you know, the history of deaths in custody in this nation, you can see a lot of the same red flags going off, you know, and something like that could happen here with one of these kids. What could the state government and, you know, the justice system do to protect these kids?
We're definitely, with the petition alone, we're kind of calling on the Department of Corrections to, first of all, stop this decision and instead focus their attention and resources on making Banksia a better place for rehabilitation, because it definitely seems like these children are being sent to Banksia purely for punishment, and there's no kind of option for rehabilitation, which is what we really should be looking at, making sure that these kids are set on a pathway where they don't have to return back to incarceration or don't have to remain incarcerated. Like, that's kind of the goal, is to make them able to survive in this society. And the fact that the government doesn't meet any of those standards, there's multiple human rights violations that are being violated by this decision, especially when it comes to the amount of time they spend outside and the resources that they are given. There's a lack of mental health care support, a lack of social support and economic support. It just is very clear that they're using their resources to punish these kids instead of rehabilitate them, even though they've been given grants and finances to take care of the horrible situations that have gone on. They continue to just punish and punish.
Mm. You say this decision isn't yet finalised. What is the community doing, and what are you putting together to try and stop this move and to protest this move?
Well, first of all, there is a petition, and it's online, but there will also be sign-ups at the rally.
Yep.
We've already got over 1,000 signatures, which is amazing. And this will be sent to the Department of Corrections and the Department of Justice, who are kind of the leads on this kind of decision, and have been targeted to make these kind of changes for years and years and years. So that petition can be found on the Plant Milk Music Instagram.
Yep.
It's just linktree/plantmilkmanagement. And in that link tree, I've also got a bunch of resources on the issue. You can mail your local MP. If you go to Plant Milk Music page or the Social Reinvestment page, they have links so that you can mail your MP. And then this Thursday at 11 a.m, we have a rally where there will be key speakers, people who have worked with children from Banksia. We also have a couple of other local activists and people like that who will be speaking. We will be marching to the Department of Justice and demanding this change, and hopefully the rally and the petition and the extra sign-ups we get will kind of be loud enough to get them to reconsider.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that we as a community can do, or at least try our best to do. And we'll share all of those resources on our own social medias. We're Perth Indie Media on Instagram. Any last words, Mia? Anything else you want to add?
I guess just to say that, NAIDOC Week has come to an end, but it doesn't mean that just that week alone we should be supporting First Nations issues and supporting First Nations lives. Like, this kind of activism and care and support is ongoing, and it's a battle that we unfortunately can't fight for and advocate for ourselves because the system is working against us. So just kind of anything that you can do, even signing a petition, can really make a difference. So just carrying on that work, but beyond NAIDOC Week, is really important. And yeah, we'd love to see everyone's support.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mia, and all the best for this campaign. And all the best for the rest of your day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Industrial activity from Woodside's Burrup Hub is causing the degradation of some of the oldest rock art in the world and contributing massively to climate change and the destruction of the local environment. Raylene Cooper is part of Save Our Songlines, who are standing up to defend their heritage from the fossil fuel giants. They just had a major march on their lands over the weekend, and earlier today I chatted to her and started by asking, what is Save Our Songlines?
Hi, good morning to you all and everybody. Hey, look, Save the Songlines is, I guess the title was basically a title that we just fitted perfect to what it basically means. We're trying to save our rock art, our traditional customs that we still follow today through our law and culture. And Save the Songlines is part of it in terms of our history and our cultural traditions that we carry through our area here in the Pilbara area. And we follow them customs, very dearly, and we use our governance and our cultural protocols to abide by those customs. So Save the Songlines are part of the rock art that we have, and they tell the stories of our history. Yeah.
So the merger of rock art that's under threat from Woodside's activity up in the Burrup Hub, it's threatening to like degrade your cultural history.
That's right. So the rock art depicts whether they're totems of or pictures of carved animals or plants. Sometimes they are the first depictions of the human face. So they're, you know, from 50 to 70,000 year old rock art. So it's times and evolution of time that they've been here for so long. And over the last, you know, between 50 to 60 years, there's been a notice of degradation, and more so in the last, you know, 5 years, we're clearly seeing that there's damage within the patina and the rock flaking away. And, you know, fungus being caused by acidic rains and, you know, in the air. So, yeah, they're causing quite a lot of problem with the emissions in the air. And what Woodside and, you know, surrounding industry on the Burrup. So we're physically seeing the effects of, climate change right in front of our eyes.
And so Woodside's looking to expand their operations there on the Burrup Hub, and I imagine that will, like, dramatically escalate these degradations of your rock art?
Oh, yes, most certainly. There's no doubt about it. We do see them. We physically see them. We have scientific evidence by those academics who have been working on the Burrup and rock art for many, many years. And, you know, we live in this area, so Mudjuga is our backyard, our home. And in saying that, we're constantly going out there and we're seeing the changes dramatically within the environment. Animals that were there aren't there anymore. They've either moved from the area because their sources of either water or food are not available, or and we have a few endangered species that have been out there. So, you know, we're seeing the effects with the ecological damage that's being done. And so you know, there's no doubt in the back of my mind the concerns that we have for, you know, humans around the area, you know, what we're breathing in, the effects of these individuals working within these industries. I mean, you know, it's you have to think about these things.
Absolutely. They're dealing with some really toxic stuff just as they're, you know, doing their operations there, let alone the, you know, massive, you know, tens of millions of tons of CO2 that are going to be polluted into the air from, you know, what they're exporting out.
That's right. That's right.
So, sorry, what was that?
I said it's very alarming. Yeah.
Absolutely. So Save Our Songlines, you guys just had a big action yesterday. You had a march for country. What did that involve and how did it go?
It was quite exciting, to say the least, but a really good cause. I mean, we were very surprised with the supporters and the contribution. We had a lot of sponsors around the businesses and the community, so it was fantastic to them all. Big shout out to all yous again. The police presence, but they were wonderful yesterday in helping us with, you know, making sure that we were okay and that other, you know, visitors that come to the area were able to access in and out. So it was really, really great. Big support from everybody. So very, very happy with, you know, how things have been going and just getting the awareness out there for everybody. This is a really special place, not just for us, but for everyone. And, you know, it's more important that we start recognising that there are some critical and major issues right now that are going on with our climate change and global warming. And I think people are starting to wake up and to say, you know, enough's enough. Where do we draw the line? So it was a fantastic turnout. Really, I'm just about, you know, losing my voice. It was a great day. Yeah. Fantastic.
Doing lots of shouting during the march.
Yes, I've never really been involved in anything like this, but, you know, it sort of lifts the spirits really high within our widart, in our hearts. And, you know, the Ngura, our land, our country, she was very happy yesterday. And, you know, to see all these beautiful people and souls out there, you know, putting their little bit in because we care, you know. So it's fantastic. Yeah, really overwhelming.
For sure. That's really positive to hear, Ray. So you've been doing a bunch of actions and I'm sure you've got a lot more planned. How have Woodside and the state government and the police responded to what you guys are doing?
Oh, look, state government and industry, we've had no success in coming to the table with any of them. We have tried to put it out there with the McGowan government and it seems that they keep pushing back and it's not a, you know, there's no concerns. They prefer industry before and money before.
Absolutely.
You know, and profits before culture or humans, people. And it's clear that this is what they feel. They haven't said otherwise. Woodside and industry out in the borough, the Yarras of the world, and Perdaman, who in particular is a big concern, another chemical plant out there on the BART that they want to do, and government, you know, pushing $253 million when we're in a health crisis. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, and then we've got the police. Look, the policing yesterday, I cannot fault the police. They were really quite helpful yesterday. They do have a hard job, and it is a hard job to be getting out and doing the things that they do, and like the front, you know, our health system and our frontline workers there. I mean, you know, that they really showed a lot of dedication and commitment yesterday to coming together with everybody. So it was just fantastic having their support yesterday.
Absolutely, I hope that
I can see that there's a bigger picture. Yeah.
Yeah, I hope that relationship, you know, continues to stay a positive one.
Yep.
So what's next for Save Our Songlines? You have a convergence on the weekend?
Well, look, no, it was just been a really big last 10 months, I must tell you.
Yeah, fair enough.
And then, you know, the flights over in the UN, it was a humbling experience and very overwhelming at times. So we share those thoughts and those sufferings from all the First Nations people, not only on our nation and in our country, but also for those beyond broadly internationally who are going through some horrific times. And to see this happening still in our day and age is just so traumatic. And
my heart is
still out to them all. Oh, it's terrible. It's tragic. And in saying that, look, you know, I just right now it's all about pushing some Zeds, some sleep, and really sort of recharging the batteries, and then back on the bike, and yeah, pushing through again, pedalling it away, and we will be seeing some possibly some legal conversations where we would be going from here. However, yes, certainly still. Still up for the challenge in terms of fighting for what is right and culturally what we know and believe to be right, and that's to protect the Ngora, to protect the country, to protect Mother Earth and her people. That's and then coming together. You know, there's so much chaos in the world these days. We need to start from the home roots and coming together as a people and supporting each other, you know, and looking for the future, because the way things that are going, if government get their way and industry get their way, there's not going to be much of a future.
Absolutely. Well said, Ray. And our listeners can find Save Our Burrup Save Our Songlines on Facebook to keep up with the campaign. Ray, how else can our listeners help your cause?
We have a GoFundMe page, and basically that's pretty much to get us out and about in terms of going and reaching out to others. You know, there's lots and lots more to come. I mean, I've never really been involved in anything like this sort of outside my community. And so it's been a big eye-opener. And for all those who have worked for so many years tirelessly and have been committed, congratulations to you all, because you're not forgotten. And for all those families that are going through a rough, you know, the rough and the suffering of mining and in governments and not protecting, you know, keep up the hard fight. And please contact us. Let's come together as people, and let's do this. Doesn't matter what flavour. It's all about, you know, coming together, and we've got to turn this around. And the wind of change is coming.
Excellent. Very well said, Ray. All the power to you, and you know, all the best for the campaign. Thank you so much for coming onto the show.
No worries. Thank you for your time, and big love to everybody.
You are listening to the Indie Media Show, and here are some headlines you may have missed in the mainstream media. And they are pretty heavy. There is references to sexual assault and police violence. Protesters in Sri Lanka's capital, Colombo, continue to occupy the offices of the President and Prime Minister for a second consecutive day, vowing they will stay put until both have officially resigned. Determined to see the country's top leaders step down amid an unprecedented economic crisis, thousands of people stormed the President's residence on Saturday and later set fire to the Prime Minister's house, forcing the two leaders into hiding. Protesters are refusing to budge until the two leaders have officially left their posts. In the United States, a federal judge has sentenced former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin to 21 years in prison for violating the civil rights of George Floyd. As part of a plea agreement, Chauvin also pleaded guilty to violating the civil rights of John Pope Jr., a black teen who was just 14 years old in 2017 when Chauvin grabbed him by the throat, hit him repeatedly in the head with a flashlight, and pressed his knee into the boy's neck while he was prone, handcuffed, and not resisting. Chauvin will now be moved to a federal prison to serve his sentence concurrently with his 22-and-a-half-year sentence on state charges of murder and manslaughter for killing George Floyd in May of 2020. The Wisconsin Supreme Court is allowing sex trafficking survivor Crystal Kaiser to argue in court that she was justified in killing her trafficker. The ruling argued a 2008 state law that protects trafficking survivors from criminal liability for any acts committed as a result of trafficking extends to first-degree murder. Crystal Kaiser is accused of killing her white sex trafficker, Randall Volar, in 2018. She was 17 at the time. He had abused her since she was 16. Court records show Kenosha police knew Volar had a history of sexually abusing underage black girls and was under investigation for sex trafficking, but he remained free for months. Kaiser says she shot and killed Volar in self-defense after he drugged her and tried to sexually assault her. In Australia, and a tribunal in South Australia has heard that authorities put an intersex woman in a male prison, despite a judge asking that she be housed in a woman's facility. The woman has lodged a discrimination complaint against the Department of Correctional Services and the Central Adelaide Local Health Network, saying that they broke the state's Equal Opportunity Act in the services they provided to her. The complainant was born as an intersex person and assigned female at birth. As a child, she was given a male name and transitioned to living as a male. In 2014, she transitioned to female and took hormone replacement therapy. Her documentation shows that she is female. The woman claims that while in custody, she was exposed to cruel and degrading treatment. She was then transferred to several hospitals before being transferred to home detention. The charges in the case were later withdrawn. In 2020, the woman was charged with further offences and was again remanded in custody. She was initially taken to the woman's prison, but was then transferred to Yatala, a male facility. And that's about all we have time for here on Indie Media. You can listen back to the show via our website, rtrfm.com.au. Click through to shows and find the Indie Media Show. It'll be up within the hour. Or you can listen back later on as a podcast version without the music. I believe that's on Spotify and iTunes.